Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our weekly gathering. I see Susan is asking, Regina, do you have a page to follow on Facebook anymore? If you go to Facebook and you search for Regina Dawn Akers, a page should show up. That page is called Regina Dawn Akers Thoughts and Teachings, and that's where you'll find me now. Regina Dawn Akers Thoughts and Teachings. It's a Facebook page. So again, good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Sunday morning gathering. It is wonderful to be here, to be joined with you all. I love our Sunday morning gatherings, and I know that I am not the only one. We're going to start this morning off by greeting one another, you know, joining hands and hugging virtually by typing on our message board. And while we do that, I'm going to play a song that I traditionally play during this part of our gathering. It is by Deva Pramal and Mitten, and it is called Awakening. So please, everyone, say hi to one another.
To the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart, everybody here, melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Nice to see you all in the room. I am going to share with you today from our fifth core value. I'm sure you all know that Awakening Together has a purpose and five core values. And yes, Lynn, I am recording. Our fifth core value is this. We accept all forms as temporary appearances permitted through enduring awareness of self. We live this value by honoring all appearances and all experiences while continually reflecting on changeless truth. And the reason I picked that core value is because this week I experienced a shift in understanding and a shift in way of being, which brought this core value into a different place of meaning for me. I don't know if you all know, but when the core values came, they came very, very quickly. In fact, the way my memory has it, I was standing in the kitchen with Danielle, and they started coming, and I wrote them down on a napkin. And then, so that's how they came. They were written down on a napkin. And I certainly had some understanding of all of them. I had some understanding of the fifth core value, and I loved the fifth core value right away. In fact, I thought that the fifth core value, well, I thought all of the core values were key, actually. But I, you know, just like all of the others, I thought the fifth core value was key to what I'm going to call in this moment a well-rounded spirituality. And the way that I understood the fifth core value originally was as a spiritual practice. The spiritual practice of being able to go into the world, be in situations that maybe aren't always easy to look at, recognize if we have any judgments or fears around those situations, be helpful, and by helpful I mean with our hands in those situations, you know, like feeding the hungry and clothing those who need clothes, that type of thing, while at the same time learning to focus on the presence that is changeless. So being involved without being involved. action and non-action simultaneously. And I still see the fifth core value as a wonderful opportunity to practice. I think that there can be a weakness to a spirituality that speaks of a world that is not real, but does not step into that world simultaneously. Maybe some of you all understand what I mean. For example, there's a line that shows up in the New Testament, and actually I've seen a similar line in the Quran. In the Quran, it's Allah speaking, if I remember correctly. In the New Testament, it's Jesus speaking. But the line is something like, it's the idea that you fed me, right? You clothed me. You cared for me when you cared for others, right? And it seems like that component is a necessary part of a full, well-rounded spirituality. But this week I had a shift, and I look at this core value differently now. Not that what I just said is to be left behind, because actually, I still think that a well-rounded spirituality involves helping hands, physically helping hands. But the shift is seeing everything and everyone as in me. And so as I care for them, I care for myself, but at the exact same time, I need nothing. The words by themselves don't make a lot of sense, but with heart, they make perfect sense. We accept all forms as temporary appearances moving through me, permitted by me, because I am enduring awareness of self. I live this value by honoring all appearances, serving all appearances as I am called to serve, while continually being myself. Now I have some announcements to make. You all have heard us over the last several weeks announcing the Bhagavad Gita class that was beginning. That class has now begun, so it is no longer available for registration. But we have two more classes coming up in the near future that you can register for if they're interesting to you. One class is a study of Jesus of the New Testament. Many of you are familiar with Jesus of A Course in Miracles, but lots of people aren't real familiar with Jesus of the New Testament. And even if they do have familiarity with Jesus of the New Testament, the familiarity they have may be an interpretation that was taught to them by some religious institution. And it is amazing how clear the New Testament is, how clear the teaching is in the New Testament when you go within and read it from within. And so in the Jesus of the New Testament course, which is 4 weeks long, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to read excerpts from the New Testament, looking at it from within and discovering the incredible richness that is there, as well as discovering some clarity that, again, has maybe been slightly missing from our own spirituality. Some clarity that might help to create a more or better rounded spirituality. The class dates are February 25th through March 18th. The time is set up for the Pacific time zone, so if you're in the Eastern time zone, it's quite late. But it's 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. specifically Pacific. 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific time. That ends up being 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern time. I will be the facilitator of the class. The cost is $80. And just as is typically true with all of our classes, homework begins 1 week before the class starts. You'll be given a workbook to guide you in your homework, and your homework will begin on February 19th. Again, class begins on February 25th. The textbook that you will need to get on your own is just any translation of the New Testament. And registration for this class closes on February 18th. The second class that is coming up pretty soon is a study of the Tao Te Ching. We actually have two different class schedules to choose from for the Tao. One will be on Tuesday evenings, March 17 through April 7. This class is set up for Eastern time zone, so it begins at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time and goes until 9:30. Again, the homework begins a week before the class. So the class starts on March 17th. The homework begins on March 11th. And the facilitator will be Jacqueline Eckert. In addition to our Tuesday evening Tao Te Ching class, we have a Wednesday morning Tao Te Ching class. The Wednesday morning class starts on March 18th and goes through April 8th. It begins at 10 a.m. Eastern time and runs until noon. However, we do have a lot of Pacific members that are in the Wednesday morning classes. They like them because they begin before work, 7 a.m. to 9, and then they run off to work after class. Again, homework begins a week before class starts, so the Wednesday morning class starts on March 18th, and the homework begins on March 12th. The facilitator is Nikki Dobson. The cost of the Tao Te Ching class, whether you take it on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, is $80. You will need to get a textbook on your own, and that textbook is the Tao Te Ching. The translation that we use is the one by Stephen Mitchell. And registration for either Tao Te Ching class closes on March 10th. And again, you can get more information about the Jesus of the New Testament class or the Tao Te Ching class by going to our website, awakening-together.org, and clicking on the classes menu. Also, I have another announcement to make. Our 2015 fall retreat is now open for registration. We have a retreat scheduled in the fall here in Colorado Springs, which is really three retreats back to back, so that people can go to one, two, or all three retreats. The first retreat begins on October 30th and runs through November 1. That's a Friday evening till Sunday lunch, the typical retreat schedule. And our retreat leader is going to be Jan Frazier. The single room cost, if you want a private room, which of course includes all meals and the retreat, is $550. If you're willing to share a room, the cost is $395. If you happen to live nearby or you prefer to stay in a hotel, you can get the commuter rate, which is $295. That includes lunch and dinner each day. The commuter rate does not include breakfast. Or if you happen to live nearby and you'd like to attend on Saturday only, Saturday, of course, is the longest day, so you get quite a bit out of Saturday, that cost is $150. That includes lunch and dinner. The evening of Sunday, November 1, and running through Friday lunch on November 6th is a retreat with me. The single cost for a private room, this includes five nights of private room plus all 15 meals, is $750 for the week. If you want to share a room, that cost drops to $625, again including five nights room and 5 days worth of meals. If you live nearby or prefer to stay in a hotel, you can do the commuter rate for the week, which is $425. Again, the commuter rate does not include breakfast. That retreat again ends at lunchtime on Friday, November 6th. That very evening, beginning with dinner on Friday, November 6th, we have another retreat with Bentinho Massaro. That retreat is November 6th through November 8th, lunchtime on Sunday. And the costs are the same as the Jan Frazier retreat. Single, $550. Share, $395. Commuter, $295. Saturday only, $150. And if you register for all three retreats, you will get a discount. As I mentioned, registration is open now, and there's an awful lot of information on our website. So please go to awakening-together.org, click on events, and you'll see there the 2015 fall retreat, October, November. Click on that, and there'll be pages of information that will probably answer every question that you have. You'll see pages that show what the retreat center is like. There's information there that talks about transportation from nearby airports, what the nearby airports are. So have a look. It's $100 per retreat per person. That takes us now to our opening song. So our opening song today is by Peter Mayer, and it is called Where is the Light?
When it's late December, dark and cold,
where is the light?
When old man, he was spending low,
where is the light?
When the sun runs off a bit too soon,
where is the light?
And there's nothing but a skinny moon,
where is the light?
Can you tell me where is the light? When I rise,
where is the light?
And it's dark when my eggs are frying,
where is the light?
And it's dark when off to work I go,
where is the light?
And it's dark again when I get home,
where is the light?
Can you tell me
where is the light? Where is the light?
Summer day, when the sun goes missing in the sky, it is rising in my eyes. kerosene.
Where is the light?
I'm drinking like a Pleiades.
Where is the light?
I'm dancing like a candle flame.
Where is the light?
I'm living like a fruit flambé.
Where is the light?
Can you tell me where is the light?
Traditional church music, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. All right, let's go into silence, which will be followed by a prayer. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Of course, we let that light shine when we be that light instead of being something different. Help us to see when we are being something different. Help us to notice when we're coming from self-centered point of views. Help us to feel in our heart that we do not want to believe the role of the imposter self. Help us drop it like one would drop a coat on a hot summer's day. And let us be that light. Let it shine through being it. Speaking only from it. Acting only from it. Thinking only with it. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Amen. And now it's time for our inspirational reading by a member. I've asked Phil Frisk to read today because we haven't heard his voice here in the sanctuary in quite a while. He's always here, but it's kind of like he sits on the back row, the back pew in the corner quietly, watching. I can just see him there with his arm around his wife, looking at all of us, watching everything, smiling, but keeping very, very quiet. And I thought it was time for him to come to the front of the church this morning, stand behind the pulpit and read. So I've asked him to read today, and he accepted. He's going to read excerpts from conversation number 66 in I Am That. I Am That is a book of conversations with Nisargadatta Maharaj. So, Phil, the mic is yours.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and privilege to be a reader this morning. So I'm reading from the conversation number 66. A questioner asks, "Of course I know that I am, but I don't know what that means." Maharaj replies, "What you take to be the I in I am is not you. To know that you are is natural. To know what you are is the result of much investigation. Generally speaking, there are two ways, external and internal. Either you live with someone who knows the truth and submit yourself entirely to his guiding and shaping influence, or you seek the inner guide and follow the inner light, wherever that takes you. In both cases, your personal desires and fears must be disregarded. Questioner, once I have made up my mind to find the reality, what do I do next? Maharaj, it depends on your temperament. For earnest, whatever way you choose will take you to your goal. It is the earnestness that is the decisive factor. Questioner, what is the source of earnestness? Maharaj, it is the homing instinct which makes the bird return to its nest and the fish return to the stream where it was born. The seed returns to the earth when the fruit is ripe. Truth can be expressed only by denial of the false in action. For this, you must see the false as false and reject it. Renunciation of the false is liberating and energizing. It lays open the road to perfection. Questioner, but what is false? Maharaj, surely no being is false. What contradicts itself has no being, or it has only momentary being, which comes to the same. Questioner, then what does have being? Maharaj, that which does not depend, for instance, which does not arise with the universe arising, nor set with the universe, which does not need any proof, but imparts reality to all it touches. It is the nature of the false that it appears to be real for a moment. One could say that the true becomes the father of the false, but the false is limited in time and space and is produced by circumstances. Questioner, how am I to get rid of the false and secure the real? Maharaj, well, to what purpose? Questioner, in order to live a better, more satisfactory life, integrated and happy. Maharaj, whatever is conceived by mind must be false, for it is found to be relative and limited. Real is inconceivable and cannot be harnessed to a purpose. It must be wanted for its own sake. Self-interest and self-concern are the focal points of the false. Your daily life vibrates between desire and fear. Watch it intently, and you will see how the mind assumes innumerable names and shapes, like a river foaming between boulders. Trace every action to its selfish motive and look at the motive intently until it dissolves. So, first of all, abandon all self-identification. Stop thinking of yourself as such and such, so and so, this or that. Abandon all self-concern. Worry not about your welfare, material or spiritual. Abandon every desire, gross or subtle. Stop thinking of achievement of any kind. You are complete here and now. You need absolutely nothing. Questioner, what am I if not human? Maharaj, you are the pure being, awareness, bliss. To realize that is the end of all seeking. You come to it when you see all you think of yourself to be as mere imagination and stand aloof in pure awareness of the transient as transient, imaginary as imaginary, unreal as unreal. It is not at all difficult, but detachment is needed. It is the clinging to the false that makes the true so difficult to see. Once you understand that the false needs time, and what needs time is the false, you are nearer to reality, which is timeless, ever in the now. The real is always with you. You need not wait to be what you are. You only you must not allow the mind to go outside itself and search. When you want something, ask yourself, do I really need it? And if the answer is no, then just drop it. Don't I need a lot of experience before I can reach a high level of awareness? Asked the questioner. Maharaj, experience leaves only memories behind. It adds to the burden, which is already heavy enough. Questioner, one needs knowledge and education. Maharaj, to deal with things, knowledge of things is needed. To deal with people, you need insight, sympathy. To deal with yourself, you need nothing. Be what you are, conscious being, and don't stray away from yourself. Questioner, but experience is useful. By experience, you learn not to touch a flame. Maharaj, I have told you already that knowledge is most helpful in dealing with things. No university can teach you to be yourself. The only way to learn is by practice. Right away, begin to be yourself. Discard all that you are not and go ever deeper. Just as a man digging a well discards what is not water until he reaches the water-bearing strata, so you discard what is not your own until nothing is left that you can disown. You will find that what is left is nothing the mind can hook on to. If you ask me, who are you? My answer would be, nothing particular, yet I am. Questioner, if you are nothing in particular, then you must be universal. Maharaj, what is it to be universal, not as a concept, but as a way of life? Not to separate, but not to oppose, but to understand and love what contacts you is living universally. To be able to say truly, I am the world is me, I am at home in the world is my own. Every existence is my existence, every consciousness, my consciousness, every sorrow is my sorrow, every joy is my joy. This is universal life. Yet, my real being, and yours too, is beyond the universe. Questioner, I find it hard to understand. Maharaj, you must give yourself time to ponder over these things. The old grooves must be erased in your brain without forming new ones. You must realize yourself as the immovable, behind and beyond the movable, the silent witness of all that happens. And then the questioner asks, does it mean that I must give up all ideas of an active life? And Maharaj answers, not at all. There will be marriage, there will be children, there will be earning money to maintain a family. All of this will happen in the natural course of events, for destiny must fulfill itself. You will go through it without resistance, facing tasks as they come, attentive and thorough, both in small and big. But the general attitude will be of affectionate detachment, enormous goodwill, and without expectation of return, constantly giving without asking. In marriage, you are neither the husband nor the wife. You are the love between the two. You are the clarity and kindness that makes everything orderly and happy. It may seem vague to you, but if you think a little, you will find that the mystical is most practical, for it makes your life creatively happy. Your consciousness is raised to a higher dimension from which you see everything much more clearly with greater intensity. You realize the person you became at birth and will cease to be at death is temporary and false. You are not the sensual, emotional, and intellectual person gripped by desires and fears. To find your real being, what am I, is the fundamental question of all philosophy and psychology. Go into it deeply. And that ends the conversation number 66 in I Am That, Talks with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj.
Thank you very much, Phil. And just for the purposes of copyright, I want to point out that those were actually excerpts from conversation number 66. Conversation number 66 is longer, but you will find it in the book, I Am That, Conversations with Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Also, there's an awful lot in this conversation, and in fact, I recently called it the most important conversation I ever read. And I spent 12 days talking about each section of the conversation. If you're interested in seeing that, you can go to my Facebook blog, Regina Dawn Akers Thoughts and Teachings, and you'd have to scroll down to start with part 1 of 12. But you could read all 12 parts. Of course, I won't have time today to talk about everything in this conversation. In fact, I'm really only going to have time to kind of touch the tip of the iceberg. But I do feel it was the most important conversation I ever read. It's simply, in I Am That, this is simply called conversation number 66. Yeah. But if you go to my blog, it's called The Most Important Conversation I Ever Read. One of the first things that Nisargadatta said to this young man, the young man was someone who was going off to college. He was on a summer tour before college. So he was a very young man. And Nisargadatta told him that there are two ways of reaching truth, external and internal. And Awakening Together is an organization that's committed to the internal. The external way of reaching truth would be to go off to an ashram or a monastery somewhere and submit yourself to the leader completely. And certainly those ways of reaching truth are available and out there. But Awakening Together is committed to the internal way, each one finding the truth by going within. That's why all of our courses, whenever I announce that we have new courses, you always hear me say, homework starts a week before the class starts. That's why. We're not inviting you to come to class and listen to an expert speak and then believe what the expert says. We're asking you to go into whatever it is the class is about with yourself, discover within yourself, and then you come to class. And you share as well as everybody else shares. And by everybody sharing from within themselves, you know, a deepening may happen. But first you go within, because going within is the path of Awakening Together. When we go within, there are some things it's helpful if we're aware of. I started to say some things we need to be aware of. But maybe it's better to say it's helpful if we're aware of these things. One of the things that it's helpful to be aware of, and again, this is a part of the Awakening Together five core values, is that there isn't one way to go within. There isn't one spiritual teaching or one spiritual practice. In fact, when the questioner asked, once I have made up my mind to find the reality, what do I do next? Nisargadatta said, it depends on your temperament. Which means some people may be guided to one way of going within, one set of practices, one set of teachings, and other people may be guided to another. And that's why here at Awakening Together, we're committed to supporting one another no matter what path we feel to follow to go within. It's not the individual paths that we are joined together in as Awakening Together. It's the internal versus the external way of finding truth. That's what we're joined together in. So whether I'm going internal with A Course in Miracles, or internal by studying Nisargadatta Maharaj, or internal by studying the Quran, it doesn't matter. We're joined on the internal path. And because that's where we're joined, we want to support each other on whichever path one has a particular temperament for. Also, Nisargadatta says, what's most important is that you are earnest. He says, if you are earnest, whatever way you choose will take you to your goal. Well, the questioner asked, what is the source of earnestness? And Nisargadatta described earnestness as the homing instinct, which makes the bird return to its nest. I think often we hear that homing instinct described as willingness, or an inner calling, or our true desire, or Adyashanti calls it our spiritual aspiration. There are different words that describe it, but it's that which has called us to this path, that which is calling us in ever more, deeper, deeper, deeper into the core of the heart. That is earnestness. And so what's important for each of us is that we find and tune into and learn to listen to our own earnestness. Some people may call it Holy Spirit. For some people, it's wonderful to call it Holy Spirit. It's very helpful because it helps them to distinguish between their ego mind, their self-will, and this homing device. For others, it's not at all helpful to call it Holy Spirit because they imagine Holy Spirit as some divine being that they aren't worthy of and they can't get in contact with, and so they feel blocked. When no one is blocked, only an idea could possibly block you. No one is blocked. Absolutely no one. If you just find that desire for God, that wanting of truth, that calling inward, and follow it, that's your homing device. That's your earnestness. That's Holy Spirit. That will take you home because that's what it does. Find it, follow it. When it calls to you and says, ah, this spiritual path is so alive right now. Spend time with this spiritual path each day. Do that. Follow it. It knows your way. And don't worry at all if your way is completely different than everybody else's. Don't worry at all if someone else tells you that their way is the best way and you are off on the wrong path. If you are following your own homing instinct, there's no way you're on the wrong path. Learn to tune into yourself and follow yourself. This is what Nisargadatta is encouraging here. Another thing that's really helpful to know on this inner path is a big part of this inner path is what he calls denial of the faults. In action. To me, in action means not just in talk. You know, I think the old term is practice what you preach. Is that the term? Walk the talk, right? That's another term. It is living the denial of the faults. Which means one of the things that you have to learn from that innerness is how to live denying the faults. But you can trust that your innerness will take you somewhere and teach you that. It may take you to a particular spiritual teacher for a time, or it may take you into a particular spiritual book for a time, or it may take you into a particular spiritual program for a time, so that you can learn how to deny the faults in action. If you are just aware that that is a very real goal on the spiritual path, and you're focused on that goal with your homing device, you will learn all you need to learn. You also learn how to tell when you're being really honest with yourself and when you're lying to yourself. Lying to yourself is a huge temptation on the spiritual path. And I'll tell you where that temptation comes from. It comes from wanting to look spiritual to others. It's most helpful if you have no concern whatsoever for what others think of you. There's a wonderful story about Robert Adams. When Robert Adams went to the Ramana Ashram shortly before Ramana Maharshi passed on, and Robert Adams was sitting in the main hall where Ramana was having a conversation with his attendant. And I don't remember what his attendant was upset about, but there was something happening in the ashram that the attendant thought should not be. And he, if I remember correctly, he like wanted Ramana to step in and correct things. And of course, Ramana wasn't really one to step in and correct much, except for he would go into the kitchen and maybe correct the cooking a little bit to make sure the food was always of the highest quality. But that's about the only thing he ever corrected was the cooking. Ramana just kind of let everything happen around him. And so when the attendant started, getting upset and wanting Ramana to step in and correct things, Ramana was not responding. And finally, Ramana reminded the attendant. He said, "Do what you came here to do and keep quiet. Keep quiet." Well, Robert Adams was sitting nearby, and even though Ramana wasn't talking to Robert Adams at all, he was talking to his attendant. Robert took that as his guidance. His heart, his homing device, recognized those words as his. Keep quiet. So Robert Adams went about the practice of just keeping quiet, no matter what was happening. And as a result, he got a reputation at the ashram from all of the other people there as being weird, strange. Because everyone else there, even though they were at an ashram, they were engaged in normal practices of the world, gossiping with one another, socializing with one another. And Robert did not participate, so he was considered strange. But as Paul Harvey said, and now for the rest of the story, young Robert Adams awakened fully to the truth of what we all are. You see, you can't be concerned about what others think. You have to put your homing device above all else. If you put your own inner calling above everything, you will be honest with yourself. You will learn how to deny the faults in action, and you will do it. You won't lie to yourself. You won't pretend to appear spiritual for the sake of others. Now, the questioner, this young questioner, not sure at all what is false, asked the question, "But what is false?" And Nisargadatta responded in an amazing way. He said, "What has no being is false." And then, because the young questioner might not know what that means, he gave some other pointers. What contradicts itself has no being. We often say what changes. But I'll tell you what, if you look at your mind, you're going to find it contradicts itself all the time. If you look at your own personality, it contradicts itself all the time. If you look at your body, it contradicts itself. One day it's healthy, one day it's not healthy. One day it may seem overweight, another day it's not overweight. It contradicts itself. If you look out at the world, it contradicts itself. Nisargadatta is saying if it contradicts itself, if it changes, it is false. He also says, or if it has only momentary being, which means it's real temporarily, or at least it appears real temporarily. He says that also has no being. You know, A Course in Miracles tells us that the world does not exist. That desk I just hit does not exist, yet look how solid it is. And in fact, this, as I mentioned, this was an excerpt of conversation number 66. If you read the entire conversation number 66, you're going to find the questioner points out that it's so solid, right? How can you say it does not exist? Nisargadatta says that which does not depend for its existence, that's what's real. What does that mean? Have you ever asked where the world gets its existence? Have you ever looked? Have you ever inquired? Think only of yourself for just a moment. Put your attention only on you for just a moment. If it were not for you, would you experience a world? Don't think of anyone else and say, yeah, but they experience a world. I'm asking you to look at you, because this is the inner path, the path of going within yourself. If it were not for you, would you experience a world? If you're looking with me, the obvious answer is no. So what is the world dependent on for its apparent existence? It's dependent on you. You are the light of the world, quite literally. That doesn't mean that you're the goodness in the world. That means that you are the beingness, the isness, the life that makes the world appear to be real. Just like when we look at the moon in the sky at night when there's a full moon, right? The moon seems to have a light of its own. But we all have learned that's not true, right? What is that light? It's the light of the sun shining on the moon, making the moon appear to have light. The world does not have its own existence. The world does not exist. You exist. You are existence. And the world appears to have light because your light is shining on it. You are, quite literally, the light of the world, not the ego you, not the personal self, not the body. That all shines in this same light. You know, the body appears to have life because of your light. The mind appears to have life because of your light. But your light is the fundamental basis of everything. You are literally the light of the world. The light of everything you've ever experienced or been aware of. That's what's true. When we go inward, that's what we're searching for, seeking, coming to know ourselves as, is that light of the world. Everything else is false. Everything else only appears because of the light that we are. In fact, Nisargadatta words it this way. He says, the true, meaning you, the true becomes the father of the false. The true becomes the father of the false. It is your light that lets anything temporary appear to be. That's what we're going inward to discover. That's what we want to shift into realizing ourselves to be. But in order to do that, another important thing to realize is we must let go of self-interest and self-concern. The ego thrives through nothing more than self-absorption, self-interest, self-concern, worrying about me, worrying about my future, worrying about what you thought about what I said yesterday. All of that thinking about me, 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 me keeps me seeming to be this limited temporary appearance. Jesus talked about this in the New Testament too, right? He talked about not worrying about things, and he pointed to the flowers and said, look how lovely they are dressed. And he talked about the birds. Look how well they are fed. Do you remember that teaching by Jesus? I talked about our Jesus of the New Testament course that's coming up. And I said, you know, when you go into the New Testament, you're going to be amazed at the richness. I said, you may discover things that's going to make your own spirituality more well-rounded. One of the primary teachings of Jesus of the New Testament is this teaching. Let go of self-interest and self-concern. You cannot realize your true self if you continue to be worried about the false self. You have to let go of self-interest and self-concern. Nisargadatta says, trace every action to its selfish motive. Selfish in this case just meaning it's about me, right? And look at the motive intently until it dissolves. Just look with your awareness that is the light of the world. Just be. Just look, and it will dissolve. But you do need to abandon self-concern. That's one of the important things we want to know on this inner path that we're on as members of Awakening Together. He also talks about experience, because the questioner asks about, don't I need experience? And Nisargadatta makes a really important statement. He says, experience leaves only memories behind and adds to the burden. What is the burden? The burden is the belief that I'm this me. And if I have all of these memories, this story, I can tell you about when this happened to me and that happened to me and what she said to me and, oh, I learned this in school. And the more of those stories I have, the more I think I'm this limited self. He says, you don't need experience. It leaves only memories. Your brain stores those experiences and adds it to the idea of a me. He says, you don't need that. And then the questioner kind of asks, well, does this mean I'm not going to live an active life? And Nisargadatta says, oh, no, not at all. You will live an active life. If you are to travel, you will travel. If you are to marry, you will marry. If you are to work, you will work. But if you are practicing this inner path, you're not going to be all caught up in that. You're going to be detached. You're going to be looking inward, always denying the false, and always seeking and embracing the true. No matter what you appear to be doing, this is what you will be doing. He says the old grooves must be erased in your brain without forming new ones. And he recommends that we be the silent witness of all that happens. Or as Robert Adams heard Ramana Maharshi say to the attendant, keep quiet. Don't have an opinion. Don't have a point of view. Do what you are to do and stay out of it, just like our fifth core value. Action and non-action simultaneously. Physically, do what you are to do. Attentively, stay out of it. He says, if you are married, you will not be the husband or the wife. You are the love between the two. You are the clarity and kindness that makes everything orderly and happy. It's not that you are going to be clear or be kind. You are the clarity and the kindness, that impersonal energy. You are that. Nisargadatta ends conversation 66 with saying, find out your real being. That's what we're here for. The one purpose that we in Awakening Together is bound together by, the one purpose that we share, is realizing our true self. Find out your real being. He says, what am I? Is the fundamental question of all philosophy and psychology. Go into it deeply. And I mentioned to you all that I posted this conversation in 12 parts on my blog. If you want to go read it and contemplate it more slowly, you could do that. You just scroll down on my blog till you come to the most important conversation I ever read, part 1 of 12, and start there. But I've also posted since then a four-part writing called Who I Am. Read that too, if you feel to. Read that while you ask this question, what am I? Read the four parts of Who I Am. What am I? and see what that really means. All right, I'm going to play a song. This song is by Omkara. It's called Heart of Fire. And while I play that song, if you are moved to make a donation to Awakening Together, Barb will put a link in the room and you can use that. That's like passing the plate in church. So if you feel to make a donation, please do. And please contemplate the reading that Phil read today and the teaching that followed as you listen to this song by Omkara, Heart of Fire. All right, this is the time of our weekly gathering when everyone is invited to share based on today's reading and today's teaching. So if you have something to share, if you would like to share, if your heart is just prompting you to speak, even if you don't know what the heck you're going to say, please put up your hand and I will turn the mic over to you. What I'm doing while I'm waiting is I'm opening a file, because if no one puts up their hand, then I'm going to read to you the four-part, somebody called it a poem, on the I that is posted on my blog. I'll read that to you. Before I begin reading, though, I want to give you one more chance to raise your hand. All right, then let me read. This is actually from Thoughts of Awakening, which is a free ebook that you can get from Awakening Together. If you just go to our inspiration menu, you'll find free ebooks, and Thoughts of Awakening is there. This starts with number 266. It includes number 266, 267, 268, and 270. I, as knowledge, is not the me of forgotten mind, of ignorance. I, as knowledge, is remembrance of the heart as the core of all, as the center, as the true I of everything. To be centered in I is not to be me. It is to be all, one with all, from the center. I is an anchor when the shift from me to all has occurred. If attention floats or is distracted towards me as a center of attention, the simple statement, I, accompanied by knowledge, will return the focus of attention to the heart. I is the home of all. I is the center of being. I honors the truth of all things. I, remembered in knowledge, is reverence for all. There is no greater love than the utterance of I with knowledge. Be at peace. And remember, I is all truth. The I of knowledge is the I of all. So it listens to all things through stillness. One cannot hear in noise. Noise and chatter are obstacles to hearing. One can only hear I in stillness. In stillness, I speaks clearly. So I'll just give one more opportunity for sharing before I play our closing song. Would anyone like to take the mic and share? Well, I want to say thank you to everyone for coming and joining with me today during our weekly gathering. It is indeed a very wonderful time of week. I appreciate being here. Oh, Phil is commenting that number 66 is also his favorite Maharaj conversation. So there we go. I didn't know that when I asked him to read. All right, our closing song then. Our closing song is from the point of view that is not yet what we call self-realization, but what you'll hear in it is the heart that is not giving up on that realization. The heart that's, you know, it's the mind is saying I'm not there yet, but the earnestness is in this song. The earnestness is still calling this singer forward to discover what his heart wants him to discover. The artist is Yusuf Islam, and the song is Maybe There's a World.
I have dreamt of a place and time where nobody gets annoyed. But I must admit, I'm not there yet, but something's keeping me going. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Open up a world and and there'll be a new life to begin. I have dreamt of an open world, borderless and wide, where the people move from place to place and nobody's taking sides. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Open up a world and let me in. Then there'll be a new life to begin. I've been waiting for the moment to arrive. All at once the silence of peace will fill my eyes. Oh. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Maybe there's a world that I'm still to find. Open up a world and let me in. Then there'll be a new life to begin. I've been waiting for that moment to arrive. All at once the wrongs of the world will be put right. How nice.
Lovely, lovely, lovely song from The Earnestness of the Heart by Yusuf Islam, which has been pointed out as Cat Stevens' Muslim name. Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for joining with me today. And I will be back this evening, of course, for the Seven Steps to Awakening teaching at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And I will also be here at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for today's daily quote, which is from Eckhart Tolle. And you can find it on our website under Inspiration Daily Quote. Bye.